we work with Movement Strategy. We work with Ashley and the team at Warner Brothers on a number of things. We're going to talk about classic animation today, and so a lot of really fun stuff. It's awesome when you get to go to work and work on Looney Tunes and Tom and Jerry and stuff like that. We came to them, I guess, like a few years ago, wanted to figure out how to re-engage a lot of the fandom and really kick off a new type of campaign that Ashley is going to talk about. The entire presentation, I would say, is super tactical. I like to kind of know, like, not high level around social media, but, like, very specifically, what do you guys do? What's the software that you're using? Any of that kind of stuff. So feel free to ask us any of those kind of questions at the end. I think we'll definitely have time. The things that we're going to be talking about are what we set out to accomplish, how specifically we found influencers that matched our needs, how we worked with them, the results that we saw from the campaign, and then have some takeaways for you guys.
Hi, everybody. As Brianna mentioned, my name is Ashley Woodall. I'm the Director of Franchise Management and Marketing for Warner Brothers Consumer Products. My primary focus is on our animation portfolio. So how many of you here are familiar with Looney Tunes? Great. My job is done. I'm just going to go home now. But really what I'm tasked with doing is developing the long-term strategic plans for our franchises and really helping ensure that we are really bringing these franchises to life with consumers and also really focusing on how we bring them to life with our licensees and our retailers as well. So back in 2017, we had a problem. And our problem was that we had an amazing slate of films that was scheduled for our animation franchises, and it was all pushed out by several years. And so when you're kind of counting on a big theatrical tentpole to really drive awareness and buzz, and all of a sudden that tentpole is now not going to be in 2 years but in 4 years, how do you bridge that gap? And how do you, you know, stay relevant with your consumer target? And so that was something that, you know, obviously we looked at and went, oh my God, you know, we need to figure out a plan to help us really get to the next point so that when we were ready to engage and we did have film content, that we would be able to have the partners and the retailers ready and on board and excited to engage with us. And that's really what led us to come to Movement. And together, you know, we obviously turned to our consumer research group, and one of the key findings that we learned is that our brands, so Looney, Scooby, Tom and Jerry, Animaniacs, we over-index in awareness and affinity with millennials, which is no surprise. I mean, we all grew up with these franchises. We love them as kids. And so it would make sense that now that we are adults, that we have that feeling of, you know, passion and excitement for those brands that we grew up with. And so that, combined with the fact that, you know, 90s nostalgia and geek culture was trending in general, it was this perfect storm and really gave us this amazing opportunity to bring these franchises to life in a big way with a with this general population. Oh, this does not work. There we go. So we set out to develop a strategy where we were going to go after that millennial target because, again, we knew that the affinity was there, the awareness was there. Now we just needed to that main point, which is engagement. And what we did was we essentially, you know, needed to drive the cool factor, we needed to drive credibility, and most importantly, we needed to drive relevancy with this audience. And not just millennials as individuals, because yes, we are all people, but we are also, many of us are also parents, or at least our generation are parents. And so this was really a two birds with one stone strategy for us, where we could go after the millennial audience and not only engage them and excite them, but also turn them into eventual ambassadors when they were ready to have children, that they would be ready to take all of that great excitement that they have for our franchises and then ultimately pass it along to their kids, which is ultimately down the road, right, where we want to be. I mean, it's very important for us to engage with this cool you know, millennial audience, but ultimately a lot of our franchises are animation, and so it's equally important that we set ourselves up for success with that kid audience. So what did we do? We set out to create a nostalgia-fueled brand. So hopefully, you know, you see some of these logos and they make you smile, because who doesn't love cartoons? But we essentially took all of these great franchises. We took Looney, Scooby, Tom and Jerry, Flintstones, Jetsons, Animaniacs, and we housed them all together under a single creative platform called Get Animated. And Get Animated is more than just, you know, a phrase. It's a call to action. It is a movement that we want to inspire people to really get involved and love the franchises that we were bringing under this platform. And there were four key components that fuel Get Animated, and they are all driven by influencers. And so that's really where we're going to be focusing the rest of this presentation. But just to kind of set things up, so the first is product. Consumer products, it's in my title, it's what I do. We have to have great product, and that is really the anchor of everything that we're doing here. And so it's about the collaborations with the right partners. So the cool brands, you have Hundreds, we have Kith. These are brands that, you know, are elevated and help pave the way for our more mass plays. So when we go to a Target or a Walmart and we look to the fact that we've had these great higher end collaborations, they feel comfortable knowing that, oh, okay, this is trendy. You know, we have the confidence that we're able to buy in for the mass play at a bigger retailer. The next piece, or the next anchor of our program, is this Tastemaker program, which Jason will go into a little more depth. But essentially, we wanted to find the best content creators to help evangelize our brands. When we find partners that are, you know, niche and are developing amazing content, we let them and actually encourage them to use their voice to help, you know, us propel our brands forward. And then we have our activation. So this is something that, you know, we do probably less frequently, but we've had what are called Get Animated Invasions, which are essentially taking the Get Animated platform, taking it out of the ether and bringing it into a physical space. So we've had amazing success with activations in New York. We had a great pop-up in Soho. This past year, we did an amazing activation with the Grammy Museum. We were there for 3 weeks and did a whole huge, amazing build out on the connection between our franchises and music. And again, these activations are critical because they help bring it to the physical space and people can actually go and experience it for themselves, and it's not just in the social sphere. But why we're here today is because social media is obviously the, you know, driving force behind everything. And so before, you know, as a way to really propel, you know, these three pieces, we had to build a platform. And that platform is our Get Animated, at Get Animated, our Instagram channel. And that has become our hub for all of the amazing conversation that we were looking to drive as part of this activation. So now I'm going to turn it over to Jason with Movement, who has been instrumental in really helping bring all of this to life.
Cool. So yeah, like Ashley said, influencers kind of go over all of these different things. From being the people that create our content, that fuel our social, to being the people that are creating the amazing physical spaces, to the people that are bringing their followers to the actual activations to build buzz. And so we're going to get into the specifics around that, first at a high level, and then show you guys three examples. So the first piece is how we find them. I think some of the previous speakers talked about this a little bit. For us, there's three pretty distinct ways that we always go about this. The first is software. So we have, I'd say more recently, started to leverage software as a way to find influencers that we want to work with. I think software works really well when you have a very specific need. So oftentimes we leverage software for location-based stuff. So it's like, oh, we want to find a fitness influencer in Houston that has, you know, 50,000 to 150,000 followers. Like, that's a pretty specific thing. And software makes that so easy. Like, within, you know, just one quick query, we can find that. But what the software doesn't do is kind of go as deep. And so we use on-platform quite a lot. So this is probably the predominant way in which we're finding influencers. We'll look at, you know, who is our kind of aspirational influencer target, and then we'll go to Instagram if it's an Instagram-based influencer, or YouTube if it's YouTube-based, and just start doing a ton of searching. So I'll get more into the specifics of this as well and some of the examples, but really we start either with somebody that we currently follow that we're like, this person would be great, let's kind of see who they're connected to, or we'll start with a hashtag. So again, using fitness, we'll use like a Motivation Monday hashtag. We'll see kind of who the top Instagram influencers are. And then we'll start to kind of go down this hole of, who do they follow? We use the Instagram recommendations a ton. So if you go to somebody, there's, I'm sure you guys see it on mobile, it's automatic. On desktop, there's a little button that you press. And it shows you a whole bunch of people that are similar to them. We use that a lot. And then the third way that we find them is through press. We tend to like to work with influencers that are getting press themselves. I think, there's so much conversation around influencers and how influential they actually are, and all the conversation around fake followers and gaming the system. People that are actually getting more traditional press, you've kind of weeded them out, right? Like if editors are doing that work and they're saying this person's really interesting, that's another way that we find them and we kind of vet them. The other thing, and I'll talk about an example of this, is if an influencer is getting press, then the activation that we're going to do with them is more likely to get press. So it's another kind of good way to vet them. So then there's kind of three main things that we look for when we're working with influencers. The first is leaning on what they do best, then utilizing them as creators, not media, and the third is transparency. So the first is leaning on what they do best. And I think I'll talk about a lot of these kind of in the context of mistakes that we've made or I've seen brands make. I think that oftentimes people will say like, oh, I really want to work with this influencer. They're great. I like them. And then they'll brief them on this thing that's just like really different from what they actually do. And that's tough on the influencer. The end product isn't great because it's not like that thing that they typically do. And it leads to a really, I would say, rocky relationship and project. And so we really look for influencers that are doing exactly what we want to be doing. So whether it's somebody that's an amazing artist because we want to have great art, or if it's like a comedian and they have a very specific type, like if they're a super raunchy comedian and we have a family brand, we're not like, oh, they're really funny, but let's make them do family-friendly content. It just doesn't work that well. I think also another way to look at it is, it's really kind of a mutual investment that you make. So us as the brand or agency, we're investing time and money to pay them to have a partnership for them. They're also investing in the relationship, and they could kind of just like mail it in and do the least amount possible and get paid, or they could really put a lot of themselves into it. And the more that we are tapping them and saying like, we really love what you do, we want you to do that for us, the more they're going to actually put into it, and the more that they're going to invest in the relationship. So that's something that I would say is a watch out, is to like try to get them to do something that isn't what they typically do, because in our experience that hasn't worked. And when we really do kind of say like, we love what you guys are doing, we want you to do that for us, then that leads to really great partnerships. That kind of leads into the second thing, which is utilizing them as creators. So there's really there's many different ways that you can work with influencers, but two kind of main differences. One is looking at them and saying, hey, these people have an audience of 100,000 followers within this space, and we'd really like to reach those followers. And so we're going to pay this influencer to post on our behalf. That's really looking at the influencer more as like media and a distribution arm. The way that we tend to look at influencers is as creators. And this is typically, not always, but across most of the relationships that we have and the projects that we do with our clients, we're hiring them, and even the contracts reflect this, as content creators for us. And this does a lot of things. I think one is that it's much less expensive. So if you're and you can kind of imagine it from their perspective, if you're saying like, hey, I want you to hawk this product for us, you know, post it on your Instagram or your YouTube or whatever, you know, they're probably devaluing their platform a little bit. There's going to be a pretty big cost involved with that. It's not necessarily something that they're going to be excited to create and post. If we instead hire them, you know, based on like their day rate or a project rate or whatever, and we say, we love what you guys are doing, we want to hire you to create a piece of art for us or to create an installation for us or whatever. And then we really work closely with them to bring something to life that they're really excited about. The reality is, I don't know, 80, 90% of the time they post about it, and they post about it kind of a lot. And so it ends up being that we have content or whatever it is that's really great, that is exactly what we wanted. We also got the thing that we wanted, which is them to distribute it to their audience, but we didn't pay for that. And it tends to work that way. I would say like 90% of the time, if we have a great relationship, they'll post on our behalf, even though we didn't pay them to. And so it's much, much less expensive. And then the third way in which we always try to work with influencers is through transparency. And again, this is like another mistake that I see a lot of people making. We try to have a really transparent relationship with them for the entirety of the project. I think also, like, we're an agency and we work with influencers a lot. And so, you know, it's not like we're going to go to one and if it doesn't work out, then like, bye, we'll never talk to you again, right? We want to have long-term relationships. We want to have a good reputation in the industry in terms of how we treat them. And so transparency is really important. And transparency starts at the beginning. I think it's very unusual that we'll just go out to one influencer. Usually we'll say, you know, to Ashley or our clients, we want to work with this type of an influencer. Here are a few different options for you guys to look at. We're honest with the influencers at that stage. We'll say like, hey, we're really interested in working with you. Here's the project. Give them the details, vet their interest. We'll also say, hey, we just want you to know, like, we are also talking to some other influencers and we'd really love to work with you on this project, but we just want to be transparent about that. I think, again, that's like something that I you know, we talk to influencers a lot. Like, I think oftentimes people will go to an influencer and say like, oh, hey, I want to work with you on this project. You know, can, like, we love you so much. You'd be so amazing, blah, blah, blah. They're not honest about the fact that they're, you know, briefing other influencers. And then when they don't end up, you know, teaming up and they don't have a good explanation or the influencer never hears from them, but they see the brand posted, like, that project, it's not great, right? And it's important to maintain, I think, your reputation, whether you're a brand or an agency or whatever. And then throughout the entire process, we kind of maintain that same level of transparency. So during the briefing process, you know, we'll say like, hey, you know, this client in this case is really great to work with and they're easy and you guys would be great. But, you know, if it's a tough process or there's like lots of, you know, red tape or whatever, we just are really open with them throughout that. And that tends to, again, it's just like trying to get them invested in it and putting their all into it, without just like throwing, you know, tons and tons of money at them. And the more transparent we are throughout, the more that happens. So I have three different examples to walk you guys through from the Get Animated program. So the first is something that we did with this guy, Joshua Vide. So he's an example of somebody who actually gets a lot of press. He's this really cool artist. This is kind of his like general aesthetic is he makes everything white and black. This was for one of the invasions. So we were building out this really cool space at the Graham Museum. These invasions are kind of this like blending of cartoon world and real world. So you walk into this, we call it cartoon dream world, and you can see you know, all of these like amazing different cartoon spaces, and it's very much inspired by the Museum of Ice Cream and 29 Rooms and all that kind of stuff, trying to create this like selfie fueled space around our properties. And so Joshua was perfect for this. We saw all of the press that he was getting, and one of our KPIs for this campaign and this pop-up was a lot of earned media. And so this seemed like a great opportunity. We then worked with him to build out this space. So this is this like Space Jam basketball court where we had Space Jam running. We had from the Grimm Museum all of the different scores from that soundtrack, which was pretty awesome. And we built out the space. Joshua, because he's a bit more famous, had a really tough schedule. And so, again, it goes back to that transparency. We were just, like, transparent, I think, with the client, hopefully Ashley feels this way, about his schedule and just, like, that he wouldn't have as much time to build out the space. And so we had to be really specific with it. Approvals would probably be a little bit, you know, we need to approve more stuff just because, again, he has all this stuff going on and he was a big get for us. The next example is Lizzie Darden. So Lizzie Darden is part of our Tastemaker program. We wanted to build out content for our social media for @GetAnimated that fit a particular aesthetic. We wanted like bright colors and really cool art. And Lizzie is somebody that we found natively on the platform. I'm not sure where the team started with, but I think they did a lot of like suggested for you and just like scrolling and continuing to do that until we found Lizzie and we saw, you know, her aesthetic, which was amazing. And then we had a really great process of working with her. So, you know, Lizzie was somebody that, again, we hired her as a creator. We weren't saying like, hey, post this on your channel. We also really respected her as an artist. And even though she was like an Instagram artist and not, you know, a fine artist and gallery, we were like, we think she's amazing. And we think of her as an artist. And so we wanted to really respect the kind of artistic integrity of the project and her work. And so we started with briefing her on this project, and then we got a number of different concepts back, which we loved. I think also in terms of kind of just like being open with her, we didn't mandate anything. We said like, this is generally what we're trying to do. We want to support this product, which would be in Macy's. We showed her all of the different product that would be available. We allowed her to pick her favorite pieces, so she felt like some ownership of it and kind of again just felt like part of the process. And it was and so she put this concept together. We loved it. And then she executed this. This was like one of three pieces that she made for us. We think this is really cool. The other ones are equally cool. And we use these for Get Animated. Macy's was really happy with kind of how this turned out. And then just because of it being great and the partnership being awesome, she posted all of the stuff on her social. She, you know, is like on her feed, Instagram stories. And now I feel like she's like a top commenter on Get Animated. So, you know, really great partnership that actually didn't cost us that much. And then the last example is Kieran Ho. So this was for, so the Get Animated invasion has kind of gone international. And I think this was for the Hong Kong. Yeah. So there's an invasion in Hong Kong that was being run by the Hong Kong team, inspired by the work that we were doing. And for our social, we wanted to cover that event and we wanted to talk about it. But we didn't want to pay for, you know, a team to go over to Hong Kong. I mean, I would have gone. we couldn't. And so we needed to find an economical way of getting somebody over there that could document this in kind of an editorial way. And this is an example of where software was helpful for us. So we used a combination of software and in-platform search, where it was like, we need to find fashion influencers in Hong Kong, which is pretty specific. We use this platform called Clear, K-L-E-A-R. I think it's owned by Meltwater. It's not too expensive, and we find it really great in that they have a really extensive database. It's easy to use. I mean, you can see the interface right here. I feel like I was just messing around and typed in what I type in. Like, yeah, fashion in Hong Kong, and pretty straightforward. Got a lot of there's probably hundreds, and then you can sort by like how many people are following them and all sorts of other parameters. We also did, like, here's an example of how in-platform is really helpful. So we looked at Vogue Hong Kong, which I think is somebody on the team, you know, knew of Vogue Hong Kong and that they had a strong Instagram. And then we looked at all the people that they're following. And at the top of their following list are some of the verified people. So, you know, another way that we kind of went tackled this problem. So the way that we worked with Kieran is he... he captured the content. So we actually put him in touch with the Hong Kong, WB Hong Kong PR team. And he was working closely with them to get all of the details around the event because we were in LA and didn't have everything. But one of the things that was really great, and this was something that we looked for when we were searching, was Kieran is actually from, he lives in Hong Kong, but he's from Canada. And so communication wasn't a problem at all. He really understands kind of what we were looking for. And so that made it really easy. So he went to the event and he captured all of this really great content for us. The whole process was very seamless of him capturing stuff on his phone and then uploading it to our Dropbox. And then the team could see it in real time and figure out what we wanted to post. He also, I think in this situation, we actually did pay him to post on his social, which is pretty unusual for us, but I feel like it wasn't very expensive, so that's what we did. Another reason also that we typically don't pay people to post, and we try to just have a really great partnership, is that, as I'm sure everyone knows, if you're paying them to post, then you need to, you need the influencer. There's like a number of things that they very specifically have to say, right? Like hashtag ad or sponsored or whatever. And it's not ideal. If we're not paying them to post, but they decide to post without us doing that, it's probably still a little bit of a gray area, but I would say there's much less need to for them to disclose that because they're not actually getting picked to post. So that's how we worked with Kieran. And Ashley's going to talk about a few results of the program.
Great. So in terms of the kind of core KPIs that we were looking at, obviously channel growth was one of them. We were starting off with zero on our platform. And so over the past year and a half, we've grown to nearly 200,000 followers on the Get Animated platform. But less important in terms of the growth is certainly important, but it's really about what this channel does for us and for kind of my objectives in my business, which is I needed to, again, convince consumers, right, that my brands were still relevant and cool, which is no easy task when you have, you know, a ton of competition out there. But more importantly, I needed to convince my licensees and my retailers that my brands were still cool and relevant. And so being able to have a platform that has a global audience, 200,000 followers, even though, you know, there are certainly accounts that have millions and way more as far as the actual number, being able to point to a channel where they can scroll through and really see the type of content that we were putting out there and see the type of engagement that we were getting gave them the confidence that they needed in order to invest in the brands. And then when they invest in the brand, then it becomes a self-fulfilling prophecy because then we have, you know, cool collaborators that are creating content or creating product. Then we have our mass retailers who are viewing that and saying, okay, yes, this is cool. So now I have the confidence to go and take on, you know, more of a share and bring it into my mass retailer. And so when we look at kind of that KPI, yes, you know, social growth of the channel is certainly something that's important. It's something that we look for, but it's not the end all be all for us. Another really key driver for us is engagement. So again, having that core base to actually engage is really important. But for us, it's also about just the conversation that it inspires. So when we look at just, you know, the fact that in January alone, we had 3.4 million engagements, that's 3.4 million times where our brands are being discussed in the context of Get Animated, which is huge. And that's something that we place a lot of value on. Again, less, you know, driving to the actual consumer, but more about how we're able to package this story and take it and use that narrative to go and sell our properties into the other licensees and to the partners that we're working with. And I guess the last really is just the press, the overall amount of press that this partnership has landed for us. I mean, 97.5 million unique views across the press hits in traditional broadcast and online. This has been a huge success for us because, again, in a time period where we don't have that tentpole content to rely on, this has been able to fill the gap for us. And now that we do have that tentpole content that's been announced, it is a great way for us to kind of speak to, well, hey, when we didn't have that content, look what we were able to do with our brands in this time period. And now that we do have that those tentpole moments with some great theatrical films that have been announced and slated to come out over the next 3 years, now we have the energy and that momentum to carry us forward and land the types of programs that we need to land. So ultimately, you know, we view this partnership with Movement as a huge success because through the influencer activations, we were really able to really drive that energy and excitement when there otherwise might not have been as much, which was really critical for us.
Cool. So just to recap here, which I'll do quickly because I feel like I talked a lot about this. So three ways we find them: software, on platform, and press. And the three things that we've learned that have really steered successful partnerships are learning on what they do best, utilizing them as creators, not necessarily media, and having a really transparent and honest relationship with them throughout the course of all of it. So thank you. We're a little early, so we have questions. Yeah. No, I would say we haven't. I think that, I mean, in transparency to you and all of you, like, I'm not the one that's actually on the phone with them all of the time, so there may be cases where that's, where that is the case, but I feel like most of the time in talking to the team, it's really like they appreciate it because they understand kind of like what the opportunity is. I think also it actually helps us in rates because it's anytime you're bidding against other people, you want to be aggressive, like or you want to make sure that you're not pricing yourself out. We also tend to just be transparent with them around what the budget is. So, you know, and this is something like as an agency, I always hate this game of like, well, what's the cost? Well, what's your budget? You know, and it's like annoying. It's like, well, if we just are honest with each other, we'll get there much quicker. So I think we typically will say like, hey, do you have a rate? You know, and if it's a thing, we'll say like, okay, well, you know, we're thinking it's going to be $2,500. You know, does that work for you? And have a conversation.
We're not always going after influencers that have the highest, let's say, number of followers. It's really about finding the right influencers for the project. And so I think there's definitely a lot more competition when you're looking at, you know, again, as Jason mentioned, like influencers as content creators. So, you know, they're trying to figure out what their art is worth versus what their platform is worth. And so because of that competition, we found that we've had more of a success because not everybody's knocking on their door because we're looking for a very specific niche thing that only they can do. I think that's definitely a big piece of it. When we're looking at promoting a collection, we want to make sure that we're being, I think authenticity is something that we didn't necessarily highlight here, but it's really, really important. If we're pushing a higher end collaboration and collection, we want to make sure that the influencer that we're working with understands that space. And when we find that authenticity, when we find that they're authentic about it, we know that our results are typically greater.
And I think that's also something when we talk, when we're in the briefing process, we make sure that they're a fan. And we'll actually recommend to, you know, Ashley, like, hey, we want to work with this person because they're actually like this huge fan and they whipped out their like whatever yearbook and they showed us these photos, you know, and that kind of it's like, okay, they're really invested in it. So that's critically important. for the physical activation, are you saying? I think it's a combination of the influencer. So I think and one of the things that we've learned is that influencers drive so much buzz. So I think a good example is the first invasion that we did in New York. We did a little bit of paid media. I don't know, maybe like a few thousand dollars. We had just, I guess to set it up a little bit more, we had like, 8,000 square foot retail space in Soho. It was open for 3 days. It was ticketed, but the tickets were free. But we wanted to kind of manage some of the crowd a little bit. And we started to get a bit of press. Like there was a Hollywood Reporter thing about it. We did some paid media about it. We pushed it out on social and tickets were coming in. But it wasn't like we definitely weren't sold out. We then did an opening night party where it was like invite only influencers. We had a lot of like really amazing influencers there. And they started posting about it that night and it just like, boom, it sold out like so fast that night. So I think one of the things that we've learned with these activations is do an opening party, invite all of the influencers, celebrities you can, and that's going to be the biggest thing to drive like awareness and buzz. You call on people from now on. I feel like we're both.
Oh, we're both pointing. Okay, so sorry. You in the back, and then we'll go in the front.
Yeah, exactly. And I think like a different example was we were working on a YouTube show with and we wanted some really big influencers and they're, you know, to come and be talent on the show. For us to pay them to post on their YouTube channel would have been tens of thousands, if not hundreds of thousands. But they're all like aspiring actors, right? You know, they're YouTube and they're making money, but you know, except for like the, I mean, these guys were big, but except for like the top like 0.001%, they're not like super famous, like in the more traditional sense. And so the opportunity to come and like be an actor on a show around a big brand, you know, we were getting their day rate, you know, and their day rate for acting is like $1,000 or $2,000. These are people that have millions and millions of followers. And so, you know, that's how we're engaging them. And that's what the contract looks like. They come and we give them this amazing experience. We outfit them in tons of swag. You know, we make them feel like rock stars. And then they document that experience. And so that's typically how we tend to work with them. And it just is so much more economical for us and tends to build really great relationships. Yeah, I mean, so we typically don't ask people to do stuff for free. I think the free part is posting on our behalf. So we want to pay them. We actually don't want, like, I think sometimes we'll do stuff where we'll give people swag or gear or whatever. But I'm a believer in actually paying people for their services. I think that, you know, these are people that are trying to make a living through their craft. And so what we focus on is paying them for their craft and being really fair with them about that and trying to be transparent throughout the process of exactly what we're getting and what they're going to be delivering towards for us. The free part comes in, you know, they go so above and beyond. They post for us. They talk to their followers about us because the relationship has been great. And I think, again, it goes back to that point of leaning on what they do best. You know, so like if we focus on the thing that they're already posting about organically and we pay them to commission one of those, they're going to want to post about it because all of these guys are looking for content all the time. And so that's kind of how we go about it. And that's the free part. But I'm actually not a big advocate of trying to get influencers to do stuff for free because at the end of the day, they're trying to make a living. But I do think with like trade, if you have really good product, that can work.
That's a great question. I'll answer the first part, and then I'll defer to the second part to Jason as far as what tactics we use there. It really depends on the individual influencer. So, for example, the Lizzie Darden post that that Jason highlighted, there was an actual product that we wanted to sell. We wanted to feature a collection that was available in store. And so, you know, we could have gone the tactic of just throwing a shirt up on Instagram and hoping that people would, you know, buy it or be interested into it. Instead, we took the tactic of let's put it on a really cool model in a really cool, innovative way and a content creator who's going to do something awesome with it. And so in that case, our call to action was a little bit more, I think, hidden. It wasn't as overt as go buy this shirt. It was, oh my God, look how cool this shirt looks within this context of this piece. And then, you know, naturally people are more interested in it. You know, we're not stupid, right? Everybody knows that they're being marketed to and that, you know, ultimately the purpose of that post is to drive awareness for that product. But by not being as overt about it, I think we were able to, you know, garner a little bit more goodwill with the consumer. When we do have content that we want to drive to, we certainly do use this platform as a way to drive to that content. But I think for us, it's more about balancing that overall general brand awareness with a sell, sell, sell message, because at the end of the day, you know, we want to build, or we as, you know, Warner Brothers or Consumer Products, we want to build that relationship with the consumer, and nobody wants to be, you know, just sold to continuously. So I think there's a very delicate balance, but that's why the influencers help, because we're able to navigate that pretty effectively. And then as far as the shopping piece,
yeah, I think I guess it's all in the context of like influencers versus just Instagram in general. But we've had success with like to buy it or like to buy on Instagram in terms of like driving traffic. I think swipe up can be effective as well. One of the things that I feel like we've learned is, you know, consumers can find products pretty easily. And so if we're relatively overt about what the product is, or they can see it, you know, through a pretty easy Google search, like we've seen a lot of traffic. So I think oftentimes one thing that's interesting that we'll see is that the clicks on like the profile link or whatever the swipes up aren't that big, but the actual traffic to the PDP page is like much bigger right after something. So that's something where I think oftentimes with influencers, especially last click attribution can be really hard, and so you kind of have to have a more holistic view of kind of how it's affecting things. I think also another big thing is community management. You know, people are smart and they can find products, but they also can be really lazy. So people say like, what is it? Where can I buy it? So we do a lot of community management where we'll let people know in the comments. And then also in the case of the influencers, if we're not paying them to post, you know, we're not going to say, hey, if you do post about it, use this link or whatever, but we'll moderate their channel. So if somebody's asking them kind of like, hey, where can I buy that? We'll go in as the brand and say like, oh, you can buy it in this place. I feel like Meltwater and Clear are come together, and it's like a couple of $1,000s a month, I think, is how much we pay. But there are influencer tools that are less, like $1,000 a month, to do this type of stuff. There's a lot out there. I think, and to your point, it kind of depends on the volume. So like if it's $2,000 a month, it's $24,000 a year, and you're doing one campaign, it's going to be really expensive. For us as an agency, you know, we buy it because we're doing that on behalf of a lot of our clients, so it makes sense. But I think there's a pretty big range.